This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to Postcards from Midlife. I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy.
And some idiot's given us another series of Postcards from Midlife. I don't know who, because we're not professional podcasters at all, and we barely know what we're talking about. Anyway, what we're going to do is carry on chatting about all the big and small issues that affect women in this stage of life. Everything from insomnia to mind and body wellness, HRT, your sex drive, your career, and your relationships. We're going to bust some myths, and we're also going to talk to some experts on your behalf. And as always, the challenges and the joys of parenting teens.
Yeah, we were really blown away by the reaction to the first series and all your emails, reviews and social posts, which have shown us that there's just so much more you want to explore, discuss, chat and share about being a woman in your 40s and 50s. And in fact, we had this amazing letter from Nicola in London.
Lovely letter.
It was a very good one, wasn't it? Who kind of sums everything up, I think, about how I've been feeling about the last few months as well. She says, thanks to listening to your podcast since the beginning of series one, I self-diagnosed perimenopause and took myself to the doctor who prescribed HRT. I've just finished my first month and can honestly say I think you have saved my marriage and my sanity. The thought of being in lockdown, feeling as desperate as I did in January, doesn't bear thinking about.
I think that's lovely. We did actually get a lot of women contact us saying they were feeling really desperate and they didn't know what they were going through, and they listened to us and we gave them the facts and they did know what they were going through and they did get themselves to their doctors. So thank you very much for that, Nicola. Please do keep sharing your stories with us. You can find us via our website, our Instagram and our new Facebook group, all of which are rather handily called Postcards from Midlife. Search up those and you can contact us.
And you can also follow our personal accounts if you so wish. I'm at Trish of the Day on Instagram and at Trish Halpin on Twitter.
And I'm Sunday Times Lorraine at Sunday Times Lorraine. As my children often call me, which is really infuriating that they should call me by my Instagram.
It's a very grand title. Right, shall we get on with the show? Because I am super excited about this week's special guest.
Yes, you are. You're very excited, aren't you, Trish? You're like a little escaped meerkat poking a little head up every time we mention her name. Well, I do share your excitement because she is a joy to have around and very inspirational, I think, for other women. And I'm delighted to say we kick off series two of Postcards from Midlife with the novelist Marion Keyes, who'll be talking about her midlife journey, which is quite extraordinary. And I think it will resonate, or bits of it will resonate with everyone. She's had huge career successes, but she's also had terrible, terrible lows, the low of depression and actually feeling suicidal. But now, at the age of 56, she's riding high once again with her most recent novel, Grown Up.
And new to this series, we're also going to be trying out some beauty, fitness and wellness fads.
Not fads, Trish. Not fads.
Oh, no, they're not fads. No. But actually, they're mostly DIY, aren't they, for obvious reasons.
We're trying and testing a lot of things so we can be helpful and useful, because we are useless podcasters, but we might have other helpful and useful things we can do.
We're hopefully going to be useful on today's teen topic, which is all about laziness, or rather why they weren't necessarily being as lazy as we thought they were in lockdown.
The epidemic of adolescent laziness, yes. And talking of lockdown, Trish and I haven't seen each other in the flesh for months. Personally,
months.
I'm not a big hugger anyway, so it's not...
It's been the dream for me,
this one-meter rule. I've wanted to... If I was Prime Minister, I would have made the 1 meter rule anyway. I don't see any need to be.
You touching. Know what's going to happen the next time I do see you in the flesh, though. I'm going to hug you and you're going to hate
hideous.
It.
Hideous.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
So we've recorded series two of Postcards remotely, as it were. We've been doing it on Zoom with our social distancing issues. And Before Marion joins us on Zoom from Dublin, Trish, tell me how the last few months, it's July now, how have the last few months been for you? Because we've had a very different experience.
I think everybody's probably had their own unique lockdown experience. And, you know, mine has been a mixed bag. You know, like you, I've been working in magazines and journalism for nearly 30 years, in glossy magazines, raising a family and basically having very little time to myself.
Going to the cover shoots, off to fashion shows,
all of that. I mean,
wearing all the latest designer numbers.
It seems like such a different world to me now because I've really enjoyed being at home and taking each day as it comes. But on the other hand, I left my job as editor of Marie Claire last September to begin a kind of freelance consultancy career. And let's just say this is probably not a good time to be freelance. And my husband, Neil, is also self-employed. He's a photographer, as you know. And so he had to close his business. He runs a studio and he had to close that for a number of months. So I think for the first time in a very long time, we've lacked that kind of sense of security that you spend your 20s, 30s and 40s building towards. But actually, it's not been a bad thing because it's meant that instead of sort of mindlessly coasting along, I'm kind of thinking about my second act and that actually it might be quite different to what I just assumed it would be when I left Marie Claire. Yeah. But so doing some research and thinking about a few different things at the moment. So I'll fill you in on that.
I think what I've discovered in lockdown, because I'm at home, I work 4 days a week, so I have a day off, but I'm also writing a book. And I've got the four kids, two of whom have lost their whole summer. Dog, husband, we're all here. We're doing homeschooling. And actually what I've noticed I've done, I have tried to maintain the busyness, the kind of constant, we must be doing this at this time, we must be doing that. And if there's a moment spare, we should be filling that, we should be occupying. And it's really made me think that that's not actually ideal. That's probably part of the reason we're all so tired, a bit rage-filled at times as well, and that there can be moments where you don't have to have that. We've done this thing with the family where at the beginning we had to take them out for an hour every day because that's what, you know, I'm very much about that. Oh, that's what everyone does. We must go out for an hour every day. And actually we've kept that going and that's really nice. And I know my eldest is going to leave home.
Yeah,
and she won't be there. So these... I've been given this gift of time with her that I wouldn't have had before. She's nearly 18. She's going to go to university in September. And I walked past her room the other day and I thought, one day later this year, she won't be there. And that will be a very sad, the whole dynamic of the family will change for sure. But that slowing down, I think that's been a really important part of lockdown. I think a lot of people will have felt that.
And I'm sort of one of these people that I have my diary like 6 weeks ahead. It's like every social thing is booked in, whether it's, you know, friends or family or whatever. And of course there came to a point where everything got cancelled and then there was nothing. And actually that's quite nice. Yes. So I've tried to promise myself that I might just try and do that and just have weekends where there's nothing and then it can just be spontaneous rather than this constant forward motion of thinking, right, what's coming next, what do I need to book next, what weekend is it, da, da, da. Do you think you'll be slowing down, you're continuing the
well I do, yes I think I will. I'm not massively keen on social events, as you know, Trish, so it's actually for me. But I tell you what I have discovered, which I think you have to give yourself permission to say who you are as well, is I do not like working from home. I like to be surrounded by my people at work. I like to bounce off. And I don't think that's a bad thing. And right at the beginning, I thought, I'm weird and left out here because no one else, after 6 weeks, lots of my friends were saying, isn't this lovely? I was thinking, it's not really. It's not lovely at all for me. I'd quite like to be going on the tube.
Yeah.
We've managed to keep producing Style Magazine, which I'm really, really proud of. I've got such an amazing team who just get on with it. But it's been an unusual time. I have discovered a new cocktail, though.
Go on then. Did you make it up yourself?
No. It's a thing that exists. Have you had a gin gimlet?
Oh, I have. I have. In a hotel. Yes. In a hotel bar. It's the sort of thing you get in a hotel bar.
Have one lie down. Oh. Also,
isn't it just a load of gin?
Yes, gin with some lime in it. Yeah. Well, so that's been quite a discovery. The dog's put on an enormous amount of weight. How's Margot?
Oh, well, she's very hot today and she's very furry and fluffy. So you'll be pleased to know nothing happens when she's that. No, there's no action from Margot. She just has to lie down.
Do you not mistake her for a rug?
Yes, you could. She could be trying. I did actually kick her in a Pilates class the other day. No, it wasn't Pilates. I was doing a little bar class on the end of the bench,
bar
you know,
class.
Zoom.
Who
one.
Are you?
I know. It was great. I love it. And that, unbeknownst to me, she'd sort of wandered in and I just kind of hoofed her. Slightly across the room, but anyways, it's her own fault. But I think we should see where we are at the end of episode 12 to see if we're still being slowing down and being mindful.
Well, I'm not having anyone come within a meter of me until I'm too old to push them away.
I'm determined to get to you before the end of the series, so we'll see.
And now it's time to welcome our special guest, the author Marion Keyes. She has sold more than 30 million books since her debut novel, Watermelon, in 1995. Using humour and Irish wit, she writes entertaining, thoughtful stories of women going through painful experiences who emerge with a new understanding of their life and their place in the world. Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, lovely Marion Keyes.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm warm. It's really warm in Dublin and I am not built for this weather. But otherwise, I'm grand. Thank you.
Well, listen, I wanted to let you know that Grown Ups, well, congratulations on the success of it, by the way. That was your recent novel. That got me through the early days of lockdown, I have to say. And I listened to the audiobook with you reading it and you were amazing. You were so good at doing the voices and the... How do you find that? How do you do that?
I loved doing it. It was the first time that I had voiced a novel of mine, and I had done a non-fiction book like 1,000 years ago and it took forever and it was immensely tedious and I was dreading doing this, but you know, my publishers wanted me to do it and it turned out to be such an enjoyable, it was the most fun time and I felt very proud of, you know, being able to do the accents and all of that. I really enjoyed it and like the plan is hopefully to do the rest as I write them. You know, it made good listening is kind of how it seemed to me.
How long does it take you to write a book, Marion?
Oh, I mean, that took me 2.5 years. I am slow. I am really slow.
I mean, there's so much content. There's so much that we could discuss about Grown Ups. I absolutely loved it, but it deals with a lot of actually really quite serious issues, but obviously with a lot of wit and charm and characterization. I mean, you do disordered relationships with food and body image, self-esteem, confidence, and a lot about the pressures of midlife marriage. Do you want to just give our listeners a quick synopsis and tell us what inspired you to write the book?
It's about three brothers and they're kind of glamorous, good looking, you know, attractive family. They have wives, ex-wives, adult stepchildren, younger kids. And on the surface, they all get on very well because everybody makes the effort. And obviously underneath, things are far more complicated because they always are. But everything stays fairly functional until one of the wives, Cara, gets a bang on the head. She gets concussion and she knows something about, she knows a secret about some of the other people that were there that night, some of the other people in the family. And this happens at the start of the book. The reader doesn't know the details of the secrets, but they know that secrets have come out. And then the book starts 6 months earlier and you see everything that happens to this, like this, you know, big, messy family. The ages range from 22 to 50. And, you know, I wanted to have that range because I think, you know, human beings, we are always worried and we're always afraid, but I think our worries change as we age. I mean, for a long time, I really thought I would get to the age where like I had evolved out of my fears and that I was just kind of this benign, wise, calm figure who never got upset about anything. And I'm kind of realizing now that I'm going to get upset about stuff till the day I die.
Where are you in your midlife journey then? Where are you emotionally and physically?
Well, I'm 56. So I am...
How does that feel, being 56?
Yeah, it feels weird. I mean, I now and again, I think, God, that's immensely old. Like, how did that happen? And then other ways it feels like, because our lifespans have expanded so much, it does really feel maybe, you know, literally midway through my life. And then, you know, a lot of the time my age isn't something that I think about. I'm well into the menopause, utterly devoted to HRT. And other things have started happening. Like I have really bad arthritis in my fingers, which...
How annoying. That seems so unfair.
Yeah, are you doing a lot of all the typing?
Yeah, I do, but my mother has it. I mean, I inherited it. But I used to always, you know, with the arrogance of youth, I used to think, right, so she has arthritis. Well, I'm not going to get it. You know, I thought that I could arrogance my way out of it. I could just decide, no, yes. No arthritis for me. But no, you don't get the say in these things. So yeah.
And how do you feel about your image and your look and your body and all of those things that women stop and think about a bit as they get older?
I mean, it's complex. There's a lot that I'm okay about, in that I suppose I feel that the rules don't really apply to me anymore. There are things that do bother me, like the fact that my metabolism has come to like a grinding halt, and that like every Percy Pig I eat, I put on a stone, you know, and I can go like a month living on like salted water and like nothing shifts. I mean, that is really, that's kind of distressing and frustrating. Other stuff, like I have Botox and I, again, am devoted to it. I have had fillers on and off, and, you know, I have made my peace with that, because I think when you're a woman, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And, you know, people are so quick to take ownership of a woman's appearance and go, you know, Jesus, she's let herself go. Or, oh, ho, who's been guzzling the Botox? You know, I think whatever you do, you get judged. And I thought, OK, judge me with my smooth forehead.
No. It does look really good. Yeah. Is it because you want to look younger?
Not so much younger. I mean, the forehead thing was because I looked so cranky the whole time. Like I have two furrows here, and like literally you could plant potatoes in them. They're so deep. And, you know, I always looked like I was disapproving. And I mean, I'm not actually a disapproving person. I felt like it was misidentifying who I am. Yeah. And so my lady who does my injection says that she makes me look fresh. Fresh is lovely. I want to look fresh.
So you were talking about being devoted to HRT. Can you tell us what was going on for you in terms of symptoms, or what was happening that you went to the doctor to get some help?
Well, I was 45, and it was the year that I can't even describe it really, tumbled into the most awful state of mind. I mean, they call it a major depressive episode. To me, it felt like a nervous breakdown. That isn't a medical term any longer. And I went to my doctor to refer me to a psychiatrist, and she did. But she also said, well, let's check your hormone levels and see where they are. And she said it was really, really hard to check if a person had started menopause or if they were perimenopausal, because apparently the tests are not very reliable. But anyway, it came back and it said that I had, you know, dropped estrogen in a fairly dramatic fashion. So, I mean, she put me on HRT then. And it's funny, it was only kind of years later that I began to wonder if, you know, I've never found a reason for why I suddenly kind of fell off the cliff.
So 10 years ago, just over 10 years ago, people weren't talking about HRT. Everyone thought it would kill us. It was viewed in a kind of evil way. And no one was really putting the symptoms of perimenopause, which Trish and I only learned about last year, even though we're grown-ups, together with all your symptoms. It just feels there must have been so many women going through that at the time as well.
I agree. Utterly and totally. You know, I do wonder if the appalling way I felt had something to do with the kind of the sudden drop in these hormones that had been like part of my body for like 3 decades. You know, and I see it now in younger women. Like I see that their anxiety levels go through the roof, or rage. Like rage is suddenly upon us.
Oh, the rage.
Because there isn't enough estrogen to dampen down our natural testosterone anymore. And nobody knows about the menopause. You know, women are not given, there's still so little information available, you know, that women are going through all this weird stuff in their 40s, and there's nobody to say, listen, you're all right, really, it's just hormones have gone haywire, and there are ways to help you if you want that help.
But I think you're living proof that once you get through, and you can go through the worst of times, the best of times is kind of round the corner.
I mean, I have to say, like when the war years, I call them, like the terrible years, I honestly could not have imagined ever feeling happy again or feeling joyous or feeling love again. Like that was another aspect of it. Like I felt like I loved nobody and nobody loved me and people just irritated me.
It's so annoying, isn't it, when you want to club someone to death just because they can't get any money out of their purse in a queue.
Jesus, you know, like when everyone is like put on this earth to annoy me. And like now I feel different. I do feel calm and joyous a lot of the time and full of love. And so it is possible to get through awfulness. But like coming back to the HRT, I am terrified at the thought of coming off it, like terrified. And as one of you said at the start, like in the bad old days, like it was always, oh no, horse's urine, you'll get breast cancer. And I mean, the thought of going back to the state of mind that I was in, I'd rather take my chances with the horse urine, although apparently that's not the one I'm on.
That kind of thing of not feeling alone is really reassuring in the first place, isn't it? It's almost the first step to going to get some help, because a lot of women Trish and I talk to think that they're going to be saying something silly to their GPs if they say I feel murderous and suicidal.
Yeah, and you know, as soon as somebody says, oh yeah, I had that too, and it's textbook for your age, you know, the relief of that, you know, that you're not innately broken or defective.
Well, it only affects 50% of the population, obviously, so it's not that important.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I have often said like that if men experience the menopause, I mean, there would be so much information. Also, they would be given the 10 years between 45 and 55 off work.
Paid. Yes, they'd be like a mat leave for them.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And do you think in Ireland, is it, how well talked about is menopause? Is it women having menopause in the media? Not at all.
No. I mean, I know Ireland has really, really made strides in recent years, especially when it comes to women's rights. But I think, I mean, the menopause is a weird one because it is not an attractive issue.
It's not sexy, is it?
It's really not.
No.
And it's a joke. Like menopausal women are mocked.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, ha ha ha, there she is smashing plates and growing hairs on her chin.
Covered in sweat.
Yes. And it's like we are ridiculous, kind of mockable people. You know, and it really does signify the end of sort of abundant, fertile lushness. And then you've crossed the line into sort of haggard, desiccated old witchery. I mean, even when people hear the word menopause, they kind of go, oh, Jesus, don't say it. Do you know, it needs to be said an awful lot.
Female hormone deficiency, we refer to it as.
And another way of looking at it, I think, is that it's like adolescence in reverse. Because adolescence is such an appalling time in terms of, you know, emotions and changes in your body. But there's an awful lot of compassion for teenagers. And there's a total absence for women experiencing something similar, but in reverse.
Mm. How long do you think it took you to feel kind of yourself again, better after that age of about 46 when you went through that? When did you start thinking, oh, I'm back in the room?
In 2014. So I was 49.
What did that feel like? Was that more energy, just less suicidal thinking?
Yeah, it was like coming up from the bottom of the ocean and like, you know, when your ears pop on a plane.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I did have more energy. I had more joy, much, much more joy.
Being in your 50s can be, I mean, we're both in our 50s, can be really liberating, can't it? It can be such a liberating time. How do you feel it's been for you compared to, say, your 20s, 30s and 40s? We all have such different milestones in each decade. But for you, what's been great about the 50s and maybe some of those other decades?
Okay, my 20s were an absolute car crash because I hated myself all the way through them. I drank alcoholically and I actually got sober when I was 30. So I feel like my life didn't really begin until I was 30. And then, I mean, my 30s were lovely in so many ways, and that like I changed jobs and I became a writer and I got married to a lovely man. Well, I worked like a dog. And I think an awful lot of people will identify with that because I had opportunities and they had to be taken there and then. There was no such thing as doing it at my pace. Like the pace was always set by other people. So, you know, for a long time, like I worked, I slept, I went to AA meetings, and there wasn't really time or energy or headspace for anything else. Then the ages actually from 40 to 45 were glorious. I had found a kind of a more forgiving way to treat my working self. And I know this sounds really showy-offy, I looked great in my early
life. You still do, Mary.
You still do. But there is a moment in everyone's life, isn't there, a stage when we look at it and we think, oh, why was I worried? Yes. I looked great then. It was brilliant. Yes.
I have a photograph of me when I was 45. It was at a thing, a book award thing. I had done my own makeup. It was all my own work. Do you know what I mean? There was no kind of glam squad doing me. And now and again, people use it in, you know, articles and stuff. Jesus Christ, I looked amazing that night. So that was up to 45 was good. Then 45 to 49 was horrendous. So kind of the rest of my 40s were kind of grim. Then 50 to now has been, it's been lovely, really, in that, again, I'm still working, which I'm so grateful for. But like I said at the start, I take so much longer to do things now, and I forgive myself for that. And actually, my publishers have also decided to forgive me and to let me do it at my pace. So I feel that kind of the work-life balance, you know, that kind of mythical thing, is kind of okay.
And talk to me about children, because you've talked about this before and you've written a bit about it. So you don't have children, lovely Tony. Yeah. How do you feel about it? And how do you think it affects your life at this stage? Because one of the things Trish and I talk about in the podcast is this kind of perfect storm of you're at your murderous, ragiest, and then you have teenagers in the house, and it's just all too, but you've had all other things to deal with. So talk to me about the family aspect of life.
It's still something that there's sort of an empty room in me, you know, that will never be filled. It doesn't cause me sorrow or kind of longing the way it used to. But like I had a moment, like maybe a couple of years ago when I was 54, and I suddenly thought, Jesus, I'm 54. So it's really not going to happen. And I realized it had taken me until then to kind of fully accept that it wasn't going to. And like, I know my life would have been really different. I know my relationship with Tony would have been really different. I suppose I feel really grateful in that it didn't split us up, and it didn't destroy me. And that it was something that I was able to kind of come to terms with over a long period of time. And also, I suppose, to be grateful for the life that I do have. You know, to kind of focus on what I have rather than what I haven't.
So I think you're such a great observer of men and women. You know, you write brilliantly about men. And, you know, you just, so many things you think, you read, I think, my goodness, that's right. My friend does that, or my sister does that, or my brother does that, or, you know, and you're such a great social observer. And some of the characters, I think, in Grown Ups, we were talking about, you know, people not having children. Nell, for example, in Grown Ups, I mean, I thought she's a really interesting character because she's not going to have children.
Yeah. I mean, Nell is 30, so she's a millennial. I'm very close to my 20-year-old niece, who informs me she's not a millennial, she's a Gen Z. Emma, my niece, I love her so much, and she's an immensely moral person, and she's so concerned about the planet in a way that it's a matter of life and death.
Yeah.
And so Emma, my niece, does not buy new clothes. Like Nell. So I gave Nell an awful lot of Emma Keyes's characteristics. And I think there's a huge gap in thinking between, like, I'm borderline boomer, which, to my shame, you know, you two are Gen X. I'm so jealous of you. you know, but like there's 36 years between me and Emma, which isn't that huge really. But our view on the safety of human life on this planet are so different. So yeah, I gave a lot of those characteristics to Nell, and Nell decides that she's not having children, even though she adores them and she's great with them, because she just doesn't want to, because our planet is already way too full. And having a child is another way of using up even more of our scarce resources.
I'm sure we'll be hearing some more of your thoughts in your next book. So that's what you're working on at the moment.
Yes. What's next for Marion Keyes? What's happening next?
I'm trying to write a sequel to another of my books. It's called Rachel's Holiday. It's about a woman who went through rehab. You know, it's 20 years on and she's in perimenopause.
Great. So you're going to bring the actual word perimenopause out into the... It was such a shock for me and Trish, because we kept having these phone calls going, what's, I think there's something wrong with me. I've gone a bit funny. I feel a bit sad and I can't go outside and I think I'm going to die and I can't remember. These conversations went on for about 2 or 3 years before we found out what the perimenopause is. But if you're going to put it in a book, that's going to be brilliant for everybody. Thank you so much, Marianne. This is really helpful. Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. That's just been a joy. Congratulations. And thanks so much. It's so nice to talk to you.
Lovely talking to you.
Hello, I'm Mariella Frostrup, and you can hear my afternoon programme on Times Radio. Join me as I talk to renowned guests about the worlds of culture, lifestyle, and entertainment. Listen to my afternoon show for free on DAB Radio, your smart speaker, online at times.radio and via the Times Radio app every Monday to Thursday, 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. on Times Radio. Know your time.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
So the past few months have been very strange times indeed, as well as challenging and certainly difficult on a day-to-day basis. And living with teens has probably been even more of a learning curve than usual without the parameters and structures of normal everyday life. So Lorraine, I'm wondering what that period has been like for you and maybe what surprised you about your kids and teenagers.
Well, they do get up very late, which I don't have a problem with because their rhythms are different. But they don't seem to have any plans. They've had all their big plans taken away, clearly. So they're a bit lost. But I think for me, I tried to think that it's not laziness, it's lack of purpose. Because at any age in life, no purpose is quite, it can make you depressed and anxious. But they do stay in bed a long time and they do just get quite slothful. Have you ever followed a teenage girl around the kitchen?
I have watched.
Put the lid on anything or drawer, leave it open. And why is that open? Oh, God, what's the point of you? Well, why are you nagging me now?
You know, talking to a lot of my friends, we've all been quite stunned at how inactive our teens were in that period. And obviously with the long summer to follow, obviously for my age kids, they were doing their GCSEs. So there's this whole huge gap in their summer happening. But I think, you know, what I wanted to remember was actually normally they're not lazy. They are, you know, we talked about them being messy and dropping towels on the floor and all that sort of thing before, but actual laziness, they're not, because they're usually really, really busy with school, with sports, with social activities. So lockdown, I think, was really exceptional. You know, we sort of tried to get them to come on walks and, you know, Esme said, yeah, but Mum, you know, you just walk somewhere, you might see a stick on the floor and a pigeon. What's the point of that?
Gracie said to me, why would I want to come on a walk with 2 50-year-olds?
Do you know what? They're absolutely right.
I guess
why would they? I think they're very much walking, bike rides. It's all about an A to a B. It's a purpose. You're going from and to somewhere. And again, in a sort of lovely moment of awareness, Esme said to me, but I think the thing about you and Dad, Mum, is that you work really hard. You're really busy all the time. And I get why going out into nature for you is really nice and relaxing, but it's boring for us and it's not what we're interested in. So yeah, I'm seeing it from her point of view.
I've done things where I've tricked them on a walk. Started out
that?
And I pretended to get lost, and we walked to a nearby recreation ground, and I went so far around it took us an hour and a half. They were absolutely furious, fuming. And then we had a kind of competition on steps on our phones, who was going to do the most steps. Oh, yeah. And the thought that a 50-year-old, over 50-year-old woman might do more steps than them, that tipped them over the edge. They were pretty cross about that. So
I think, you know, they've been doing a lot of lying in bed, but they are busy while they're lying in bed because they're watching stuff, they're shopping online, they're FaceTiming friends. If you ask them to show you some of the stuff they're looking at, you could be pleasantly surprised. And I have to tell you about this because it's one of my favourite things of the whole summer, is that Kit, my son, showed us this video. Bruce Lee playing table tennis with nunchucks.
Oh my God.
And beating not one, but two world-class level tennis player. So I just want everybody to go out and Google that video because it is so brilliant.
Thanks for
and
that, I thought, Kit.
Well done you, lying in bed all morning, and this is what you bring me.
I did read, because I was a little bit worried about the inactivity, which can lead to a sort of mood swing, a slump in mood. And, you know, you get there, get them active, then they start feeling better generally, and then they it's a kind of circle, isn't it? But there is, in Philippa Perry's book about raising children, there is a little bit about, and I think this is kind of, we're guilty of that, we say lazy because we hark a little bit back to our childhood. So she says that inside all of us, particularly in middle age, the child is still there. Mm-hmm. So when our parents got cross with us for being lazy, it kind of sort of, I mean, my mum was always saying to me, think of something to do. Bored children are boring, she used to say. I think we have to learn how to talk to them about it. And I think to start, any kind of confrontation about them lying around would be the worst thing to do. Mm-hmm. You've got some thoughts on structure, though.
Yeah, I think because, we all need structure, and they particularly need structure for their mental health and well-being. If they stay in bed after midday, we already know they're on a slightly different sleep pattern to the rest of us. But if they go past midday, it's going to drift even further, and they're going to quite literally end up on a different time zone. So it is important to get them to understand why it's important that they need a balance of different things in their life. So that can be friends, that can be going online, that can be lying in bed for a bit, but that can also have to be doing some exercise, helping out with chores around the house. And you might get a bit of resistance, but ultimately, if they're capable of doing things, if they do things for themselves, it really increases their self-confidence and their sort of sense of optimism about life, because they might not be feeling too optimistic at the moment if they're worried about university or what's going to happen with their exam grades. So if you can try and help them feel optimistic about the future and get them to see that all the things they do in their everyday life are building towards a future, I think that's a really positive thing. It's got to be their agenda. I think, you know, the older ones, like our age, well, my older ones, 16, it's got to be their agenda, really, but with some nudging to make sure that they're okay, as you say. Right, so we've talked about our experiences of our teens and what's been happening, but what can we actually do about it? What can people do?
I guess to sum up, there are kind of three things you could do if you think your teen is being lazy, and please don't use that word in front of them. So define your feelings, not your child. So what you would appreciate them doing, how they can help you. So you're asking, not telling them to do it. Just let it go sometimes. Don't sweat the small stuff. Just let it go, because they're going through a lot. And don't make them feel guilty about it. And just look out for the underlying behaviour. There may be something else that's going on that you don't know about. And check your timing on when you talk about that.
So now it's time for our new tried and tested section. Lorraine, what have you been having a little go at this week then?
Right. Well, I'm a bit of a mascara obsessive. I've been in the beauty industry, fashion and beauty industry, for 10,000 years. And we are really lucky. We get to test stuff way before it goes into the shops. So I have a wealth of knowledge. I'm not coming from, not like the general podcast nitwittery of me. This is actually something I know about. I actually know about this. So I have got a new mascara, which has been out a little while, but it is so good. So I tested 5 mascaras just to double check that it was as good as it is, because I'm usually a big fan of the Benefit mascara. But this is the new Gucci mascara. Mm. I can't say it because it's French. It's called L'Obscur, L'Obscur. Now, it's £30, so it is a good investment buy. But it's absolutely brilliant. It doesn't leave a mark. It doesn't shed all over your face so you look like a clown. It's really easy to remove and it really separates. So that is my absolute favourite. There is one which is quite good, which is under £5 as well. It's called the Essence Bye Bye Panda Eyes. It's £3.50 and you can get that in various Boots Superdrug. Mm. And that's got a water base, so it actually washes off. You don't have to use proper thing to get that off. But this new Gucci one, I've been testing it. I actually wore it swimming as well. I didn't wear it to swim.
Is it a waterproof one?
Yes. It was fine. It's not billed heavily as waterproof, but it was absolutely fine. But it's just so easy to... It's to do with the brush and the size of the bristles on the brush. And I think it's quite a heavy one as well. So I think all the work has gone into the brush rather than the actual mascara. What have you been testing, Trish?
Well, I've been a bit worried about my manky toes. Lockdown toes. Sorry to mention that, but with no salons opened, I decided to try one of these at-home gel manicure kits. You're a gel manicure fan, aren't you?
Massive fan, because I've got the attention span of a gnat. So once they're done, they're done. They're completely dry and you can leave them. You're never going to knock them or scratch them and they stay on for 2 weeks.
Did you know you can do it at home? You can do it yourself with something called the Red Carpet Manicure. And it's basically you get this kind of kit that it comes with. There's quite a lot of sort of stages and layers that you have to do, as you will know.
Luckily, we've all got time to do that.
Yes, exactly. But I found it actually, between prepping the nails, applying the colour, curing is the term when you shove your toes. Or your
is it like Grace and Perry baking a pot? Is that what it is?
A bit, but it only takes about 45 seconds to do the curing. So, having said that, I found when I did it, it didn't feel like it had set properly.
Don't you heat it seconds. Though? Don't you have to heat it onto your foot or not?
Well, you put it under the UV light or the LED light, and that's supposed to cure it. That's the phrase. So I just shoved them back under for another 45 seconds, and actually, I am very impressed with the results. They're really pretty. I did take a little picture though, and I might pop that on one of our social medias. Well, actually, good question. You mentioned a cocktail earlier. It's called Mai Tai, and it is a kind of coral.
That's my nickname
colour.
For you.
Mai Tai.
Now, Mai Tai.
You can be a gimlet then.
Spirited cocktail that she is.
Exactly.
What colour is that corally colour?
Well, it's a corally pink because I thought summer's here. Let's go bright and breezy. So, I mean, it's not salon perfect because of my sort of...
you're blind.
Because I can't, my hands aren't very steady. But honestly, it's so good. And I'd say better than my normal attempts. So it costs £89.95. You can get it from redcarpetmanicure.co.uk and it's also on sites like Look Fantastic. And if you want to get a different, because it comes with a little polish, probably a neutral colour. So if you want to buy another polish.
Yeah, you have to buy a gel polish.
Well, the gel polish comes with it, but you can also buy this brand's polishes for about £12, I think, extra. So,
and how do you take it off?
You've got this sort of lint pads with foil on them and you soak those and stick them on your toes for about 15 minutes. And then you have to shove it off with an orange stick. Yeah. But it's something quite satisfying about that, I would say.
That's the kind of thing you like, isn't it? Yes.
It is. Anyway, I'm very happy with my pretty toes.
Good. I can't wait to see them in actual person, but I won't touch them.
Now for a little trip down memory lane, our lovely little nostalgia noodling moment. What have you been nostalgiaing about this week, Lorraine?
Well, it's an extraordinary thing. My nostalgia noodle is an actual real life nostalgia noodle to back in time. So a couple of weeks ago, I got a letter in the post, which started, I'm so sorry, this is out of the blue. It says, I'm not sure whether you remember my mum, Evelyn or Eve. She was the daughter of Jack, brother of your grandma, Annie. I don't know what that makes. So that's my dad's cousin, I think. So that would be second cousin for
your
me.
Second
I think,
cousin,
something. She said, anyway, my mum passed away a few weeks ago. And the purpose of my letter, though, it's so nice. It really made me cry when it arrived, is to let you know that my mum follows your career progression over the years. She'd cut out articles from the newspaper. She would buy Elle magazine in Tesco's and Cosmo. She was so proud of you and everything you achieved and admired you from afar. I just thought that you would like to know this. in all these uncertain times we're going through, that someone was thinking of you, even though you didn't. I mean, I never met her, even though you didn't know
lovely.
Them. It's so lovely. Evelyn Renfrew. She was buried in May. So what a lovely nostalgia that noodle is, that is.
It is.
It's funny to think, isn't it? Your family spreads out and you maybe have an effect on them, even though you don't know the effect that you have on them. I'm so glad she took the time to write. I just thought that was a lovely thing to do. But again, maybe during these times, people have time and they can do the thoughtful
thing. Yeah, and that you want to connect, don't you? People want to connect, which I think is really nice.
What have you been nostalgic
about? Well, I, inspired by the lovely, knowing that the lovely Marianne was coming on, I started thinking about my, because she lives in Dublin, and my summer holidays in Ireland, every summer as a child. And
you are of Irish descent, no?
Oh, absolutely. Not? Both my parents are Irish. We'd get in the car, we'd drive up to Holyhead or Liverpool, and then get the ferry over to Dublin. And it was just brilliant, because we'd have 2 weeks in the west of Ireland with all the cousins and the relations and everything. And my only memory of it is being sunny, which obviously is not possible in the 70s abroad. And also, when I got to teenage years, I snogged a very nice Irish boy on the boat.
Did you?
It was very nice.
Is this like normal people?
Oh, God, actually, now you mention it, I can't remember what he looked like, but maybe I'll just substitute him or normal people for with a younger version of me, obviously, not a now version of me.
It's that's a lovely little nostalgia noodle, Trish. Well, that brings us to the end of the first episode of Series 2 of Postcards from Midlife. It's kind of lovely to be back, isn't it, Trish?
Oh, so nice, so nice.
So thank you for listening, everyone, because I know you've probably got way better things to do than listen to us rumbling on. But if you did enjoy it, please tell your friends and all the midlife women you know, and remember to subscribe on your podcast provider and rate and review us too. We would be exceptionally grateful.
And if you'd like to share your midlife experiences, join us on our new Facebook group or contact us via the website or on social media. And if you haven't listened to all the episodes of Series 1, they are still available to download. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.